it's time to come together. This conversation is at the next step.
Culture is set by leadership and who you choose to put into positions of leadership.
It's not as though the cancer is out of the body. It's not.
Leadership of an organization at the very top is really important. They are the culture carriers.
The collective women's voices have had the courage to rise up and say, enough.
Something about shining a spotlight on a problem that helps break the taboo. It helps lift the stigma.
We have to collaborate. It takes everybody.
Accountability is something that we cannot afford to lose. We cannot let that go.
We need to redefine respect.
It isn't enough to simply talk about equality. One must believe in it.
The day I start fighting for equality and for people that look like you and me will be the day I'm in my grave.
I'm Diana Pierce Burgess, and this is Press Forward, a podcast where we have conversations about workplace equality and solutions in our post-Me Too world. I'm a former journalist too, along with 12 courageous women, created Press Forward to change culture in American newsrooms and beyond. We look at new approaches and outside-the-box ideas, or reflect on past mistakes to find lessons learned so that everyone can do their best work, because this is not just a gender issue, it's one of human decency.
Welcome to part two of our powerful conversation with Addie Collins-Zanone. We pick up as she is talking about the impact that coming forward and telling her story has had on her and those around her.
You ask, like, what does it do to my family? I've been married to my husband for 12 years now. At this time, it was 10. He didn't know anything about this. He didn't know that I had had this happen with Matt. I never told him about it. This isn't something I'm particularly proud of. So in addition to worrying about how the world was going to, you know, absorb this information, I had to worry about what my husband was going to think. Right. And how if I didn't tell this story, somebody else was going to for me, so he would find out that way. Right. So I had to be very, you know, careful and cautious in how I talked to him. So I just sat him down one day and I said, so... I don't know how much you know about the note. I don't think Matt Lauer was somebody who he was particularly, you know, aware of. I think he knew him as a journalist, but, you know, that's it. But I just said, you know, I worked it today. And, you know, the story came out about Matt and he was fired and blah, blah. And very nervously, I just said, so then you need to know that he actually did the same to me. And I said, so I'm not proud of it. It was, quote unquote, a consensual affair. And his question, I could see him just breathing and trying to figure out, like, process what I had just told him. And I said, but the biggest thing is not just that I have this story, but this story is going to be told. So I need to work with you and a journalist that who I trust with my story and figure out how I'm going to come public with this to back up these women. And this is why I feel it's important. And, you know, the one question Greg did ask, he was like, was he married at the time? And I was like, yes, he was. And so he's like, and so you had an affair with a married man? And I said, yes, which means... you know, that's not something I would do, which means that talks about the influence he had over me and everybody at that show. And I'm not proud of it. In fact, it's not something I've ever wanted to talk about. But, you know, my kids had, he wanted to know if he had had kids at the time as well. And I said, no, he didn't have kids at the time. But the fact is, I have to admit and be accountable for my participation in this. But this is something that, you know, he had to be courageous enough and say, okay, I believe in my wife enough that it might be years down the line, but there's an end game, which means she wants to talk about how men are abusing their power in positions of power, and how they're abusing young women. And my wife is a great vehicle to tell that story, and I'm going to trust her with it. And he and I did that together. When the Variety article came out, Ramin, who was Ramin Setadu, I hope I say his name right, but he was the journalist who told my story basically, and I went all details with him. To just make sure that people understood this was credible and this pattern of behavior and these things, you know, our stories very much align with every other woman who experienced it. He said, you have the right to say no up until the moment we push publish. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in my house in Newport Beach all by myself, and my kids were in school and my husband was sitting there beside me, and I gave the go ahead. Mm-hmm. And I curled up in a ball. And I just waited on it to come out. And it went live. And all of a sudden, my name's blown up on Twitter. All of a sudden, I'm getting messages from gazillion people who I know, who knew me. And I didn't know how to handle it. It's just such a surreal experience. Mm-hmm. For a very normal, regular person to find herself in this position. And so it's very devastating to be sitting there not having a team of people. I don't have PR. I don't have lawyers. I don't have anyone to consult with, just myself, trying to take, you know, trying to answer questions to journalists who are calling me, wanting me to interview, all of the stuff. It's just devastating. And I never had felt so small and so helpless and out of control. But then to know I had to go pick up my kids and be normal. Mm-hmm. And how do I reconcile this new reality in this new life that I now have and get control of it? So it has been...
How did you get through that?
Therapy. I'm really not kidding. Like, a lot of therapy. You know, I had so much careful... Like, I'm, like, sweating even talking about it because I have this visceral physical response to that kind of trauma, to knowing that the world is talking about you in those terms, but knowing the truth is so different. And being able to have enough discipline to play the long game of understanding my truth will be told eventually, but it's not my responsibility to answer to each person who is calling me a whore or a homewrecker or someone who's trying to get her 15 minutes or who blew her way to the top. I mean, this it's mortifying, but I knew my truth. And so I tried very hard to be disciplined to not take every media interview. Mm-hmm. I was aware that people would say I was trying to get my 15 minutes and I was just everywhere you turned on the TV, you would see me, therefore she just wants the spotlight. I tried to be very strategic in terms of who I talked to. I talked to NBC. Megyn Kelly wrote me. I actually was interested in talking to Megyn because I knew she was an NBC show and the Today Show was offering me an opportunity to go there and talk about my experience. And I felt that was a really relevant place and it made sense to go back to basically where it happened, knowing that everybody even internally was watching the feed and they know my truth. They know the Addie they met 20 years prior or 17 years prior. They didn't know I had this experience with Matt, but they know me. Mm-hmm. Therefore I come with some credibility. Mm-hmm. And I took a few days between when my story came out to when I did the show with Megyn, and I could compose myself enough that when I went on Megyn's show, I could articulate exactly how I was feeling, mm-hmm. My thought process in coming forward, but also my accountability mm-hmm. in, you know, like my participation. I wanted to always be accountable and say, I don't think I'm a victim in the way others who have been assaulted or, physically assaulted and harassed have been. But this is a really important conversation to have because I know just from the people who are getting in touch with me that this is happening not just in journalism, but in every, you know, every field and every job and every office in this country, mm-hmm. that they know who they're going to prey on. They know that person is not going to have the capacity to say no. And if they do say no, they have the power to get rid of that person.
And that goes back to the power dynamic.
That goes back to the power dynamic.
That we talked about, that, you know, there's different kinds of cases. There's sexual harassment, mm-hmm. there's sexual assault, mm-hmm. and then there's abuse of power. And
right.
all of these things are things that we need to talk about and discuss.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about your husband and his family. You said, I remember you were talking yeah. earlier about this.
So we didn't, I told my husband he could deal with my in-laws the way he felt comfortable. He didn't let them know that this was coming out. Mm-hmm. So they are avid Fox News watchers. I'm not, but they are. And all of a sudden the news came up about Matt and they see my name up on their television screen. They were mortified. They called Greg and they were as calm as you could imagine. Greg was like, you know, I need to talk to you about Addie. And his mom just said, oh, you mean the story that came up I saw in the news today about her and Matt Lauer? And he said, yes. So his brother, their family really struggled with what I believe a lot of people struggle with this topic, and that is the consent. You know, she's 24. She had graduated college and she was working. Mm-hmm. She went in there. Why are you dragging our family name through the mud? Now, remember, I'm a Collins by birth. I'm a Zanone by marriage. Mm-hmm. So it's their name being dragged through the mud. Mm-hmm. In this instance, not mine. So I had to really take a look at that and think, was that selfish of me? You know, do I need to consider more? You know, my 13-year-old niece was at school and her friends were asking why her name was being associated with this. So, like, these are things that, understandably, my brother-in-law was like, you're not thinking beyond yourself here. Mm-hmm. And his argument was, she consented, that's it. Why is this a story she needs to tell? Mm-hmm. I think over time, they've softened up a little bit and they understand. But we always have to remember it's not just the people who are directly involved. It's those people, like the people I share my name with, You know, it is a privilege to have this name, to go by Zenone. You know, how is it going to affect those who also go with this name? And how do I get, if my family who knows me is feeling this way, imagine the general public who don't look at me as an actual human being. I got to say, I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of my husband. This has not created a huge, you know, rift in our family at all, but it certainly makes, I get embarrassed for sure. You know, it's not pretty out there what's being said about me.
And the last 2 years have probably been a bit of a strain, I would imagine.
It has been a strain. I got to tell you, I'm so grateful to them, though, because yes. I think that if it weren't me, they would have even stronger views about it, because I don't think they agree with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, for sure they don't. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. But this is kind of where I say we need to meet people where they are and their understanding of what consent means with that imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. You know, what are my good options? How could I have done it differently? Mm-hmm. Even as a 43-year-old, I think back to my 24-year-old self. I go through every single step of that process from the first time he texted me into what actually happened. And would I have done anything differently? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have, because mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known to do it differently.
Right.
It wouldn't have occurred to me to go to human resources. Well, it wouldn't have even, like, it just didn't even cross my mind that I could actually do something.
Well, and also what we've learned in all of these stories and all these processes is that human resources is not there to protect
right.
you.
Right, he's their most valuable commodity.
Right.
You know, they could have just, I was leaving anyway.
Right.
They could have been like, keep it quiet until you're out the door
right.
and roll out. But I certainly wasn't fortified with any information that if I wanted to do something, I could have.
Right. And two things that we've talked about that I want to come back to is the issue that you did have a story that I want to hear again about the online trolling.
Yeah.
And you've told me a story in the past that I'd like you to retell about some of that, whereas this person that you reached out to. So tell
us. Sure, yeah. So, you know, like I said before, it's like a landmine going into my messages, whether it's, you know, Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And I tried to be very open in the beginning in keeping my profiles public. I don't want people to think I'm going hiding. I'm not, but whoa. The idea of facing that type of backlash and then the reality of it are two very different things, and it is traumatic. Whoa. I
couldn't imagine.
It's so traumatic what people are willing to say. But this one guy sent me a message, and it was basically calling me a whore, like flat out, you're a whore, you knew what you were doing, thanks for your service, but you're wrong here. You know, you're a homewrecker. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the general idea. And first, so I don't know why I did it, Diana, but I was like, I wrote him back and I said, thank you. You're a fellow vet, you know, thank you for thanking me for my service. Something like, that's how I opened up the door. But I was like, you know, I'm a real human being here, right? And he wrote back. He's like, I'm shocked that you wrote me back. I never would have thought, number one, I don't think he ever thought that I would write him back. And then when you realize there's an actual person on the other end of that message, mm-hmm. she's real and I have her attention. I'm not so bold anymore because now she's human to me. So I said, what would you like to say to me? You know, and he wrote back and he was like, well, I just don't understand it. And I said, I understand how you wouldn't understand it. And we actually had a very productive conversation about what it means to be an actual person with feelings mm-hmm. and how he doesn't know me. And he felt entitled to call me that. Like, he felt like I needed to hear that. So what I did is I just felt like I was being humanized to him. And he came back and said, I never thought about it from the perspective of you being victimized. But this conversation, I liked it because it was very productive. He was apologetic. He understood where I was coming from. And it gave me hope that if you can just reach people where they are and say, I understand that you think like that, because I did too. But let's look beyond the black and white and let's look in the gray area here.
Well, I think you are a hero for reaching out to a troll and making a connection, because I think that is something not many people do.
That is our challenge, isn't it? It's all of our challenge to try to bring this conversation up, meet them where they are, but also make them question, you know, their thought process on this. Mm-hmm. You know, long-held views about what they believe consent is, that you actually have to be assaulted in order for it to be wrong. And that's not true. So if you can, you know, obviously we want to humanize ourselves, but you also have to humanize the trolls and say, okay, there's a real person behind there and there's a reason they think this way. How can I break that down and meet them where they are? And I had success doing that. So I think as an organization, Press Forward, and all of us who are out here fighting on all the various components of Me Too, I think that's what we need to do. Not look at people as the enemy, but as people we can reach to try to help change the conversation.
I think there's two things that you just raised with that, which are important to add on. Exactly what you just said. There's so many different things involved in this. Mm-hmm. And something that you and I, again, have talked about in the past, which is the enablers and the systems that don't help or haven't helped. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in a transitional phase now where hopefully things are changing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we try to look positively on the future of the workplace and men and women working together and all sorts of people working together without having to worry about some of these issues. But I think the issue that we all faced in the past had to do with the systems and enablers. And I don't know if you had any thoughts on that now, then and now.
The one thing that, in terms of like the systemic issues, you know, it's really interesting because, as I said, when Brooke's stories came out, when Matt was fired, I really did believe I was the only one, because I couldn't imagine that internally this behavior, the way he was with me, would have continued for 17 years and he not get caught. Like, I just figured I would have heard about it. But all that is this proof that he felt taken care of internally. Anytime I reached out to Matt in 2006, I was working at Access Hollywood. I was a correspondent for them. I had finally had a career that I actually would be at risk of losing. And so squashing that story, there was a benefit to me. Like, I was saying to Matt, like, this isn't even about you anymore. This is about me. I do not want this story to come out. Like, I am not trying to be known like that. It's that when I would write to him in an email, I would write, hey, do you have another email? I can talk to you, whatever. No, go ahead. What's the problem? You know, go ahead. What's up? He would call me from NBC phones. He would write to me on his NBC's official email, which means, looking back in retrospect, I knew he wasn't afraid of anybody internally reading that. He wasn't trying to get a cell phone. He wasn't trying to get his own personal email so no one would see this communication. In fact, I'm sure when all of this happened and then when my story came out, NBC had tons of communication between the two of us. Even as recently as October of 2017, when a reporter had reached out to me and I wrote to Matt saying, hey, this Weinstein stuff is coming up. They're coming knocking on my door. Do you know anything? You know, even as recently as then, NBC email. Mm-hmm. So I think Matt felt protected, which speaks to the systemic safeguards mm-hmm. that these very influential and powerful assets in NBC are going to protect. And it doesn't matter for me, like, it doesn't matter what we do to suppress the women who are victims of this, mm-hmm. as long as we safeguard our most important asset. Mm-hmm. And so from my own personal experience, that leads me to believe that he felt protected for all those years.
Has he ever apologize?
No. Nope. He did broadly in a message, just saying, you know, I've not been a perfect person, but, you know, there's always this but. All the stories you hear about me are not true. And I'm here to protect my family now. And that's what I'm trying to do. I haven't answered them because I'm trying to protect my family. Well, I mean, nice try, but you should have been protecting your family from step one. You know, if you really cared about your family, and I don't want to speak for him because this is not about Matt, mm-hmm. but what is interesting in hearing his response to all of this is now he wants to protect his family. A lot of these men and women, if these are women who do this as well, they want us to just forgive and give them second and third chances. And you know what? I didn't get to over the years just pretend this thing never existed and never happened. I had to learn how to live with it. Without help from anybody, with taking this story and this shame on my own, and I had to cultivate a life as a result of it. You know, now that's on him. You cultivate your life moving forward, right? It's not on us to forgive you. You are a grown man who made a choice time and time and time again, and you have a long list of victims. And I am no longer going to allow him to shape the narrative of this story. I didn't want this story told publicly, but his behavior made it possible for me to have to tell my story, and now I am. And I want to make sure that my daughter, if she finds her, she's 24 years old and she's in a situation she can't handle, that she is better fortified to not make the mistakes I did, that she is not alone, hopefully that she can stand up to anybody who would do that, and also to my son. You know, definitely I don't want him to be a victim, but I also want him to understand that he has to respect all women. It's just crazy to me that there was an opportunity for him to shape and guide and mold a young journalist who was basically begging for his guidance, and he chose that. Like, he changed my life, you know, like, he changed my life. And I mean, thank God I have the stamina, and being in the military was the greatest privilege of my life. I got to serve my country and cover the biggest news story in the world. I got access to Katie Couric and Matt Lauer couldn't have gotten, mm-hmm. because I had to live that life. But it wouldn't have happened if I weren't so damaged as a result. I was looking for some healing through the military, and I found it. But these old wounds are they come back, you know, and it made me think, like, what kind of person am I to allow that with a married man? Why wasn't I stronger? Why didn't I do more? And it is very easy, Diana, to read messages and say, you know what, you're right. You know, you're right. I am this, you know. But it, because you start to just, it's easier to believe it than it is to fight it, you know, because I'm just one person.
I think there are times when women tend to look introspectively,
yeah.
far more than men. And I don't mm-hmm. know if that's going to be seen as sexist or not, mm-hmm. but I think there are times when women do that. They blame themselves. I mean, particularly in these situations, we blame ourselves. We're convinced it was something we did. Mm-hmm. You hear this time and time again when you hear these stories. It's like, oh, what did I do wrong? I must have sent the wrong message, etc. I mean, we are constantly reevaluating ourselves right. ourselves. And I just sort of wonder whether he's done that at all. You know, if you think about his behavior and his patterns, or any of these guys right. for that matter, if any of them have introspectively taken a look at themselves and thought, okay, I have a pattern of behavior here, mm-hmm. and I should analyze that, or yeah. help go get therapy and have somebody help me analyze
right.
this to
right.
understand their own ego or their own behavior.
What I'm most curious about is, you know, I mean, with a lot of these men who are now trying to come back and have careers, you know, you stay low, you lay low for a little bit, and then you can come back little by little. You test the water to see what the temperature is, see if you can jump in. You know, Mark Halperin, for example, he's trying to get back in it, and it's not an easy road for him. And it shouldn't be. It should not be. These are not decisions that they made just one time. I mean, it's wrong. It is wrong to treat women like that. It is wrong to do that. You know what's wrong. So the idea that you need some forgiveness or no amount of contrition is enough, it really shouldn't be. There are qualified and well-deserving journalists out there who can take those positions, but you knew better before. It's not like you got caught and, oh, wait, that wasn't right. Like, that's kind of where I am. Like, what makes you think you should be, you were
do the work.
Grown adults, right? Like, of course, but just don't dismiss it, oh, it's just a mistake and I'll never do it again. It shouldn't have been done. Full stop. And you knew that, but you were like your ego and your power and your position, you felt entitled to our bodies. You felt entitled to our innocence. And that's where I think I was so traumatized by this. Like, I'm very curious to know what Matt thinks, but I have no insight into what he thinks, but I truly believe that he would look at my story and think that I was capitalizing on an opportunity and that I was a full and willing participant. And that he doesn't carry much blame for what happened. Mm-hmm. I did know for sure that if I came out, I wasn't afraid of his response because I knew my truth has always been my truth. So I wasn't worried about the Matt Lauer machine and NBC. Like, I wasn't concerned about that. I don't, you know, people ask, like, what is there a road back? And I just think it's constructive conversations, and it's not thinking that you're going to forget it, do something and move on. You are, whether you get back into journalism or find your way and, you know, as a journalist again, or get back into the business, you will never not have this as part of it, because we ladies who suffer, I have never not had this as part of my experience, and I've had to learn to make the best of it. And I think that there is an opportunity for conversation. I would have to make sure my husband was okay with any conversation I had with him before I would do that. But he is not my priority, making sure he's okay, right? Like, not at all. I just want to make sure that this issue of consent is discussed and understood, and that what can we do better, you know, as an organization, but also as individuals, journalism students, like, how can I better influence them and say, don't make the mistakes I made, because I can absolutely see where I made mistakes.
Well, and that actually is part of what, as you know, because you're part of Press Forward, what we're trying to do, which right. is to educate, to study the issues, to look at these broader issues, not just harassment, abuse of power, discrimination, you know, how to get men and women to work well together in a workplace where there is no abuse of power. And abuse of power leads to all these other things. So, that you know, studying the issue, training programs, curriculum into universities so that journalism students, when they're coming out of universities, have some sort of a training program that they can go to, or a curriculum that they can sign up for, where they understand some of these issues before they get into the workplace. Right. And I wonder, because I know you said that, you know, if you went back to your 24-year-old self and you did this all over again, you probably wouldn't have done anything different because you didn't know anything different, right? Mm-hmm. But I wonder with the training or with some added value in some of the curriculum, some more awareness, people like you and me going to universities and talking to kids about these things, you know, do you think that going into a situation that this all might help?
Oh, absolutely, because you have options. You know, like, so for example, if I would go talk to journalism students who are, you know, are getting ready to graduate, these are the things, this is my experience, these are things that you should look out for. We're not saying everybody's going to prey on you, but if that happens or you find yourself in that position, these are steps 1, 2, and 3 you could take. Mm-hmm. If even you consent and it happens, these are steps afterwards. You don't have to feel like you're sucked in. I felt like I was so sucked in that there was no getting out. I had already made my mistake. So then I had to learn how to live with my mistake. Mm-hmm. There's always an option. Right. And so that's what I think is super important, that, I mean, I think I have real, you know, I can make a real difference in young journalists' lives, both male and female. So they are better equipped to deal with this, and then they can focus on being journalists and not actually, you know, just they're just victims, you know, ready to be preyed upon. That breaks my heart to think of what I could have been. Like, really, like. Yeah, that bothers me, because I mean, I was a good journalist, you know, and everybody believed in me, and I did, and he annihilated that. And I don't want to diminish or minimize the impact of what his behavior had on my life. That because I didn't talk about it for 17 years doesn't mean it didn't exist. I had to learn to live with it. And I even think if I would have had the courage to do something 17 years ago, how many other women wouldn't have had to experience what I did? I mean, there's guilt associated with that as well. But that we cannot take people's passion from them. And you cannot, you know, these men, in my example, a man, cannot rob me of that opportunity. And he did. He had a chance to either lift me up or annihilate me. He took what he wanted and ran. And I was left to deal with it, you know. Fortunately, now with Me Too, and we're changing the conversation, I can find some goodness in my experience. But it wasn't without a lot of pain. And I just, if I could save somebody, anybody, from having to, you know, go through life trying to figure out how to best live with it, then that's what I've got to do. And I think it starts with talking to journalism students. That's where it starts.
You're absolutely saving a lot of people, Addie.
You are. Yeah, but I want to. I don't know yet, but I'm just not afraid to talk about it anymore.
And your courage and your inspiration are... admirable. It's the smallest word I can use, mm-hmm. and impressive. And I'm just honored to be sitting here talking to you.
I love sitting here talking to you.
One other issue that we haven't talked about that I know is something that we've all been thinking about is there is a show coming up on Apple, I believe.
Yes.
Called
The Morning Show. Yes.
I don't know much about it. I know that Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell are in it. It seems to be a very similar news story that is somewhat similar to the Matt Lauer story, but I don't know much about it. Have you heard about it?
I've only seen it in the news, and I've seen the preview, and it's pretty obvious that they're referencing the Matt Lauer. Steve Carell would be Matt Lauer's character, and so I haven't seen a lot of it, but I do have to say that it's really traumatizing for me personally. I can only speak for me personally, but when I saw that, I was just gassed, because how am I supposed to watch that every week? And how am I supposed to, just knowing what I know and what my experience was? And so it's really important, I think, for that show. And their intent could be to raise the level of conversation and talk about how this is. It's very, it makes me nervous because it can be turned into entertainment, and this situation is not entertaining for those who have been affected by it. Mm-hmm. And there are very few women whose names and situations with Matt have been publicly talked about, and I'm one of those. So I'm just curious where the victim's voices is in development of this show and in execution of it. Are you guys consulting how this may affect us? I know personally, I don't, like, sometimes I feel like, oh, where's my ego that I'm thinking that, you know, I'm owed an explanation. I don't think that. I just want people to consider that there are people like me who are watching this, and it's not entertainment. This is real life. I also believe that those who are associated with Reese and otherwise, they care about me too. They care about women's voices. They care about all of that. So I don't want to assume they don't, but it's very jarring to see a situation that you are a part of become entertainment and produced entertainment.
You would hope they would do it with respect and with taking into account
I hope they
women's
are.
Voices.
Right. And I'm not assuming that they aren't. I'm just curious that if it is based on Matt in some capacity, what have they done to make sure that our voices are heard and understood and part of, frankly.
Right.
So my thing is just consider it all, that we are human beings, me, Brooke, anybody else who suffered under him.
Right.
And we are going to be affected, but this isn't entertainment for us. This is our real life.
Absolutely. I have one last thing that I would like to end on, because I think this is really important to you, is what your work you're doing with
Pro versus G.I. Joe.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so my husband and I met in 2005, and I was in the military. We got married, and then I spent our first year of marriage on my second deployment. So we were separated, but my husband was always just looking for a way to give back to troops and support them in any way he can, because now he's personally involved or personally affected by it. So he was a former college football player, and we were having a conversation about what troops do when they aren't on their missions, and I said they play video games. And he was like, whoa, what if we could do something where we could connect professional athletes, you know, like me, a football player who plays games, and these troops. So we came up with this concept of pitting professional athletes against troops in head-to-head competition, despite the miles. We called it Pro versus G.I. Joe, and together we worked in partnership with the USO. That's what I did during my deployment. I just tried to solidify that partnership with the USO and figure out how downrange we would facilitate this, given that we couldn't even barely have internet to email our friends and family. I'm just really proud of what we did. You know, Pro vs. G.I. Joe is Greg and my first baby. From idea to actual execution, we said we were going to do something, and we did. And we were the first organization to bring online gaming to the Middle East, not just the troops in the Middle East, but to the Middle East. It's just the two of us. It's a passion project. We love it. Our baby is 12 years old and thriving. But we have affected many lives, and the video game is the catalyst for the connection. And because we were affected by that separation and distance, we understand how important it is for mothers and husbands and wives and kids to be able to connect. And if the video game is the catalyst, you know, there's so much heart in what we do with Pro versus G.I. Joe, because it gives the professional athletes a chance to connect in a way they never thought they would. But it takes away all of that, you know, differences that they have, the amount of money they make, the fame, and they're just 18 to 34 year old men primarily who are playing a video game, and they get to connect with somebody from home. So, I mean, it really is just this amazing concept that started out as a conversation. We decided we wanted to do something with it. And so, and that's another thing I love about my husband. Like, we, you know, together, if we put our mind to something, no matter the challenges or the stress or whatever, like, we do it, and we'll figure it out as we go, as long as our intention is real.
And what a great example to set for your children.
Yeah, it really is. And just, we're so lucky the video game is so big now. We had no idea. We couldn't have anticipated it. But, like, video gaming is huge now. And so my husband has become, like, an agent to NFL, like, to professional athletes and how to, you know, figure out the gaming world. And, so it's really great. And he works his butt off at it. And so we're a really good team.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I was grateful to be here.
After each interview, we take the opportunity to peel back the layers in a debrief to understand the issues and themes raised. Joining me now is our resident expert and Press Forward's Chief Visionary Officer, Carolyn McGordy-Supple. Wow. I know that was a difficult conversation for me, and I know that there are a lot of complexities, and I know what the complexities of Addie's story brings to this conversation, this overall conversation about sexual harassment in the workplace. I think that what strikes me first and foremost is how she has taken this journey and done it with such integrity and with such courage. But she has also been so introspective in looking at this from absolutely every single angle. I just am in awe of her. I applaud her for what how she's handled this. I think there's a lot of women out there who wouldn't even know where to start. So I just need to say that this, to me, this was one of the more moving conversations I've had. But my takeaway from this, one of the lines that she said, which was, it was absolutely clear to me that this was an abuse of power and he had done it over and over. And I think that's something that she has to remember and that others have to remember, even as this complex story plays out.
It's absolutely a complex and heartbreaking story. I mean, this is a story of somebody who persevered to get educated, to get her foot in the door at a major network, to live her dream job. She sacrificed so much with an unpaid internship, and she wasn't treated with respect by a leader in the newsroom. And her story is particularly complicated because not only is she the only person who's been public about her experiences with Matt Lauer, but in many of the stories from Me Too, it's of women who have been victimized through harassment and assault at work, who stood up to the perpetrator or maybe got unwanted attention or unwanted groping. But according to the law, even if you go with the behavior, it's still illegal. You should still never be put into a position where you feel like you have to have sexual relations with somebody in order to keep your job, to keep your reputation, or to advance in the workplace. So, you know, in 1998, she says she was with the Today Show. And it was in 2017. No, there was massive lack of compliance. And so there was no way for her to understand what was happening to her. It became clear as she told her story. Mm-hmm. She had been trained to be a journalist. She had thought that everybody in the newsroom viewed her that way. And when she started getting this unwanted attention, she tried to buff it for quite mm-hmm. some time until finally she said she became overpowered by the power dynamic of being pursued by a celebrity. Even after all those years, she'd been a mom, she'd served in the military, she kept those emails because she knew that what Matt Lauer had done was wrong, and she didn't know how to articulate it mm-hmm. until the Me Too movement. And the other thing to consider too is that this wasn't an isolated incident. She was preyed upon, she was vulnerable, she was a production assistant. It's not like Matt Lauer was propositioning Katie Couric. He was targeting those who were vulnerable in the profession. And she carried the guilt and the weight with her entire career.
And when you have such an uneven power dynamic, as you just described, when you have somebody who, you know, she is strong, she's resilient, she's smart, but she came from a small town in West Virginia. She worked her way through gymnastics at university. She ended up, by pure sheer will and fortitude to get the position that she got, you know, interning at the Today Show and living at a Salvation Army. You know, it is just, to me, you look at the strength of this young woman to get to where she was and the power dynamic there out of those two people who should have known that this was not the right thing. Who should have known? As you said, there might not have been policies in place. There might not have been awareness, but absolutely the person that should have known what was wrong here in this whole scenario was Matt.
It made me think of an experience I actually had with my harasser, which I haven't spoken about publicly, but in my case, I asked for this person for career advice on what it takes to advance in the network. And he insinuated that one of the correspondents and anchors who I admired and respected had slept her way to the top. And at that moment, it was traumatizing because I felt like, here's a leader in the newsroom who's telling me that if I wanted to succeed, I have to choose between my dignity and my career, and that my body is transactional and my beauty is my worth. And I've been raised up until this point believing that I'm an equal. Again, I didn't know that this behavior was illegal at the time. I thought it was a moral choice. And so when I see Addie go through this as well, it's not her fault. And culture is really set by the leader in the room. I mean, Matt never viewed her, it seems, as a journalist. He viewed her as a piece of meat.
I think one other thing that you and I talked about in this conversation, as did she, is the need to ask for help. And she talks very openly about the therapy that she got after this happened, and the years of therapy and the years of trying to keep this suppressed and dealing with it on her own. But I think at the time, if there's anything that we could, you know, teach people now or educate people on now, it's this idea that to reach out and ask for help. And I know there are other stories when people did reach out for help and didn't get any, but I just would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, many companies now have policies in place where a leader's not allowed to have a relationship with a subordinate. And Matt Lauer wanted to have an affair with his wife. That's really his choice. He didn't have to choose to have it with all the young, vulnerable women in his office. He could go down to the bar and do that, right? Like, so there's policies in place for a reason. And so knowing your company's policies is a first step. The second thing is that if you do face some sort of abusive power in the workplace, you may want to reach out to a lawyer for advice. Press Forward has a relationship with the Times Up Legal Defense Fund. So if you're a journalist and you're experiencing some sort of discrimination, harassment, or abusive power, and you feel uncomfortable, we'll refer you to one of the Times Up Legal Defense Fund lawyers so that you can at least get a conversation about what your rights are.
One thing that we have to talk about with regard to all of these conversations and where we are today, 2 years after the beginning of the Me Too movement, is backlash. The answer is not marginalizing women in the workplace. The answer is not not hiring women into certain positions or not having them in the room because you're going to be uncomfortable. And this is something that I really worry about, and I think a lot of people do, that we are starting to see the only way men can deal with this is by trying to stay away from women. And fact of the matter is, as we've talked about in the past, 50% of the workforce is women. In fact, this year, women are now graduating from college at a higher rate than men. So we have more women with college degrees heading into the workforce than men. So we have to be thinking about how to do this together. And would love to hear your thoughts on that.
First of all, harassment is incredibly underreported. 2% of cases that are brought to the EOC result in settlement. And the deck is still stacked against those who experience discrimination or harassment or retaliation in the workplace. So the problem is really not that you're going to be falsely accused. The second thing is just the way that the media have portrayed these stories, that women tell their stories and men lose their jobs. Like, you have to understand, 99.99% of the time, men are good and decent. But for some reason, when we get power, it changes the way that we treat others. And we have to examine the source of the problem, which is that change behaviorally when we get power, and not make it about women and men. This truly is an abuse of power.
And that's something that we've talked about too, which is that if you think that men and women are, if you make the assumption that men and women are equal, you have to assume that men and women can be equally bad.
Absolutely. And so we have to ground the discussion in ethics and values and the law. We've put a person on the moon. We've developed nuclear energy. We can help figure out how women can rise to leadership at the same rate that men can. This isn't rocket science. Maybe perhaps the biggest challenge is changing ourselves and glitching our own internal code, and maybe realizing that there are aspects of human behavior that have been programmed for a very long time that need to be changed.
That's a perfect way to end the podcast, Carol. And one last question. What is your silver lining in this conversation?
For those of you who are tuning into this podcast for the first time, the phrase of silver lining came up during the Me Too movement, because we say that out of the bad experiences that have happened to us, the silver lining is that we came together with these amazing women to help move things forward. So for me, the silver lining of Addie's story is that sometimes service of others really take shape in unexpected ways. I mean, she truly is a soldier. She was a veteran. She served in our military, but she ended up serving women. And I think if you have a chance to use your voice, using it to serve others is one of the most important things that you can do. And she was truly sacrificial in this case. What she's gone through with her family, what she's gone through to stand up in the public eye, how she's navigated being trolled online and engaging people in a positive way. Just grateful that someone like her exists.
I was going to say my silver lining was her story about the online trolling and the way that she handled it. For me, I haven't heard anybody do what she did with such courage and grace, and to take on the person at the other end who was sending her all sorts of vitriol to say, you know, this is a human being here. And for them to say, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize it's a human being. And it was, for me, an enlightening moment that hopefully we can all learn from. Carolyn, thank you so much for giving us all the expertise and perspective that you bring to these conversations. It always is so worthwhile for me and hopefully for others to hear how you take some of these themes and bring more insight to them. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Diana.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. I'm Diana Pierce Burgess, the Executive Director of Press Forward. Visit us online at www.thepressforward.org. Join the conversation on social media. You can find us at Press Forward Now on Facebook and at The Press Forward on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to catch our podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. We'll see you next week.